This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. Today marks the 58th anniversary of the start of the Arab-Israeli War. Israelis call this war the War of Independence. Palestinians refer to it as Al-Nakba, or the Catastrophe. The war established the initial borders of modern Israel, creating a Jewish state while dispossessing Palestinians of their homes in Arab villages in what had then been the British Mandate of Palestine. In 1948, along with 700,000 other Palestinians, a six-year-old boy named Bashir fled with his family from their home in Ramallah. As Palestinians were fleeing in fear of the Israeli military, European Jewish emigres, seeking a haven after surviving the Holocaust, flooded into the new land of Israel. They included the family of an infant named Dalia, who settled in Ramallah, taking for their home the empty house of Bashir's family, with its backyard lemon tree. The Lemon Tree is the name of Sandy Tolan's book, documenting the complex friendship between Bashir and Dalia, born out of a mutually incompatible desire to call the same piece of land home. Tolan's book is expanded from his radio documentary, The Lemon Tree, broadcast on Fresh Air in 1998. Tolan is a co-founder of Homeland Productions, which has produced dozens of public radio documentaries. And he directs the Project on International Reporting at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Terry spoke with Sandy Tolan last week. She asked him how Bashir and Dalia first met.
Well, they met at the gate of the house that Bashir had built, Bashir's father had built in 1936. This was after the Six-Day War in 1967. It was several weeks after the war. It was a war that Bashir and his family were expecting the Arabs to win. They believed fervently in their right to go back to their homes that they had been driven out of and many had fled from in the cities and villages across Palestine in 1948 during that war. For 19 years, they waited to come back. And when the Arabs instead suffered the most crushing defeat and the Israelis suffered the most, many felt, miraculous victory of their lives in 1967, what happened then, ironically, is that the borders changed for Israel, essentially. The lands that the Israelis were patrolling changed, and it allowed all these Palestinians to come back and search out their old homes. So it was in this way that Bashir and his cousins boarded a bus, came from Ramallah, went to Jerusalem, and arrived at the gate to this house in 1967. And Bashir rang the bell. Dalia had been an infant when she arrived. She was now 19 years old and a reserve officer in the Israeli army and a student in English literature at Tel Aviv University. She heard the bell ring and she went and got the key to the gate and she went down to the gate and she opened the door and there was Bashir and his two cousins.
And she welcomed them into the house. And that began a long series of meetings and conversations between them. And they started trading stories. And I was interested in how their visions of each other were so different. Like you write that she was always taught in school that the Arabs ran away from their homes, fleeing like cowards. And one textbook said the Arabs preferred to leave once the Jews had taken their towns. How did what she was taught in school compare to the story he told her of how his family actually left their home?
Well, he was enraged by, he didn't say anything at first, but, he later told me and he wrote in a memoir that he wrote, he was very angry with this idea that we just left, as if, in his view, we Palestinians were not driven out of our homes and had not spent the last 20 years praying and just determined by any means necessary to get our homes back. So he described to me how furious he was that anybody would characterize that way. And he began describing to her in a series of meetings over the months and years the connection that he had to the home and to the land and especially to the lemon tree.
So Bashir and Dalia, the Palestinian and the Israeli, meet, they share their stories, they get to know each other a little bit. And, you know, reading this or listening to your documentary, you think at this part of the story, oh, I see what's going to happen. They're going to kind of start empathizing with each other's stories. And at that point, they're going to unite and talk about the need for peace. That's not what happens. First of all, Bashir keeps telling Dalia that her family should go back to Bulgaria and give them their house back.
Yes, she felt so connected in as their dialogue progressed, and she one day actually risked something personally by when the West Bank, the beginning of the occupation in 1967, she actually went to see him in Ramallah and ended up having this long, long conversation at his house in Ramallah where his family was living. And she began to think, well, I'm connecting with him. We're telling our stories. I'm relating to the to his love for his land. And I can relate to it because of my love of Zion, my love of Israel and our exile for so many years in Europe. And so she starts thinking, oh, I can understand you. And he just looks at her. He just totally he does not understand how someone who didn't bury their parents in their grandparents in that land, who haven't lived for generations right there on the land as his family did, he doesn't relate to her longing for a place that she wasn't born in and that her parents weren't born in. So he tells her, look, the solution is for all of you to go back. And she just feels like she got punched in the stomach. And she realizes, she begins to realize, this is a little more complicated than I thought. And he just tells her, look, you stole the land from us. We have a right to go back. What right do you have to take this place that we lived in all our lives?
Well, eventually, Dalia gets quite a shock. There's a supermarket in Israel that's bombed, and Bashir is arrested as one of the suspects. He's sentenced to 15 years, but Bashir says that these were false accusations and that if the Israeli government had been able to actually prove the charges, he would have been sentenced to life, not 15 years. Let's hear an excerpt of your documentary, The Lemon Tree, which was first broadcast in 1998, 8 years ago, and your new book, The Lemon Tree, is expanded from this documentary. Before we hear from Bashir, we'll hear some of Dalia's reactions to his imprisonment.
I used to walk by the Ramla prison every day on my way to work. And I was having thoughts whether I should go and check if Bashir was in that prison, because it's a very large prison for long-term prisoners. And I never did it. You think of it every day, you know. But yeah, I felt very betrayed, and it was too much for me.
I did not confess, and they could not extract a confession from me. However, I am Palestinian. I have always hated occupation. And I believe that I have the right to resist it by the means that are available to me. Yes, at one stage, the means were violent. But I understood them. I understood the actions of the Palestinian fighters who are ready to sacrifice themselves. I still understand them.
I believed he was guilty. I still believe so. And I would be the happiest person on earth to be disabused of this notion. Indeed, I was for many years waiting for a letter saying, I never did this, or a conversation. If I did this, I'm very, very sorry. But I never received such a letter. But I am his friend, yes? Am I his friend or not? If I'm his friend, he can tell me frankly, I had nothing whatsoever to do with it. And yet, he belongs to an organization which puts it on its agenda to destroy Israel, also through terror actions, so-called armed struggle. Bombing buses and so on, where also Palestinians are, and also Palestinian children can be, because terror is indiscriminate. And I can be on one of these buses, too.
We have suffered many massacres. Duwaymi, Kfar Qasim, Deir Yassin, Sabra al-Shatila. In the face of all these massacres, dispossession, if anybody thought that the Palestinian would react like Jesus Christ would have, he is wrong. If I didn't have this deep conviction to the bone marrow in the necessity of hating the occupation, I don't deserve to be a Palestinian. This feeling, political feeling, started at the age of 6 when we were expelled.
That's an excerpt of Sandy Tolan's 1998 documentary, radio documentary, The Lemon Tree, and he has a new book that's an expansion of that documentary. How much time did Bashir end up spending in prison?
He spent 15 years, from 1969 when he was arrested until 1984 when he was released.
As Dahlia said, she cut off contact with his family when he was arrested because she was so upset at the thought of his involvement with the supermarket bombing. And she eventually becomes convinced that Arabs and Jews would have even more trouble than she thought living side by side. Can you talk a little bit about how she was politically changed by his imprisonment?
Well, she did, as you say, Terry. She did feel very betrayed by Bashir, and she felt, well, if he was guilty in this, then how can I? If there's just, she believed so much in personal dialogue as the key to transformation, and that if there is no hope for dialogue, then what is there hope for? So she actually became quite zealous, as she describes it, in the defense of Israel, and she withdrew from the family. But I want to tell you a story about what happened just before she withdrew, when Bashir was still in prison around the time of the trial, before he was convicted. Bashir's father came to the house, and he had said that he would not come to that house, that if he came to the house that he had built in 1936 and he saw it, the house that Dahlia and her parents were now living in, he would just have a heart attack and die. But then one day he decided with his daughter Nuha and his wife Zakia that he would want to visit the house. And he came there. He was almost blind. He had been going blind for a long time, so he could barely see the house. And he came, and there was Dahlia's father, Moshe, and he invited them in, and they came, and they went and sat in the backyard, and there was, he was very unable to really see his surroundings, but he asked Moshe, Dahlia's father, there was a lemon tree here. Is it still here? And so Moshe got up along with Nuha, Bashir's sister, and they guided him to the tree, and he then stood there under the branches just crying, and Moshe gave him these lemons. But it was this kind of connection that Bashir saw, this attachment that he saw and experienced and saw in his father, the humiliation of the loss and turning a whole nation, essentially, a whole group of people, the Palestinians, into refugees, that gave him the political convictions that he had and that were just expressed in that tape that we heard.
How did Bashir's imprisonment change Bashir?
Well, in some ways, I think it made him more committed to the whole idea of return by any means necessary. He met a lot of people in prison. He became a prison leader for better conditions. They would have all kinds of meetings, and they'd put on skits and plays, and they'd read everything from Shakespeare to sometimes they'd smuggle in the writings of Palestinian poets or other literature. They read Victor Hugo. They read Mark Twain. They listened to Chopin. They listened to Arabic music like Kulthum. And I think Bashir's politics became sort of more firm in a sense. He became a Marxist and someone who was as committed to the return of Palestinians to their homes as he ever was before he went into prison.
After he was released from prison, having spent 15 years behind bars, Dahlia sent him a message that her father had died and her house was empty, and she wanted to meet with him about the future of the house. What was that conversation like?
Well, Dahlia and her husband, Yeheskel Landau, she was married by this time, went up to Ramallah where Bashir was meeting, and they met in the home of an Anglican priest, a Palestinian man, and his wife. And they met, and Dahlia had been thinking, you know, ever since these days, these many years that she would refuse to talk to Bashir, would not be in touch with his sisters or the rest of his family, she still kept thinking, you know, this house is a house with the experience of two families, the joys and the losses and the hopes and the dreams and the loves of two families. It's not just the house of one family. And now that her parents had died, she felt not only the responsibility of deciding about the future of the house, but she personally did not feel that she wanted to make this decision absent a conversation with Bashir and his family. And she at first offered to sell the house and give the proceeds to the Khairi family, to Bashir's family. And he said, no, no, there's no selling of the patrimony. This is our home, and you can't sell this house, Dahlia. And she said, okay, well then, you know, what do you propose? And he said, well, Dahlia, I lost my childhood here in this house. I haven't been able to come back to this house. I would like to see it become a kindergarten for the Arab children of Ramleh. They were still about, and still are, about 20% of the town is an Arab population. And so she and Yeheskel readily agreed that that's what they would do. And in addition, they wanted to turn the house into a center for dialogue, a center for encounter between Arab and Jew. And so to this day, it's called Open House, and it is both a kindergarten for the Arab children of Ramleh and a center for encounter between Arab and Jew.
Is Dahlia involved in running it?
She is. She's very involved in it, and she's very involved in groups that promote the whole notion of coexistence, which is a very difficult thing to talk about in the current atmosphere.
So where would you say that Dahlia and Bashir stand now politically?
I think Bashir still believes in the right of Palestinians to return to their homes that they fled or were driven out of in 1948. As a practical matter, this is quite difficult to imagine because many of the villages that Palestinians lived in 1948 are gone. They've been destroyed. There was more than 400 of them. Where would these refugees who are now living in refugee camps go exactly? There have been a lot of discussion of this from Palestinians who say there's a way to do this. But in a practical matter, a lot of these villages, there's cities built on top of them. And then if you look at the neighbors of Dahlia, the people who are living in Ramleh and the neighboring town of Lydd, where so many for tens of thousands of Palestinians were essentially expelled from in 1948, where would those people go? So Dahlia does not believe that Bashir's solution is practical. She believes in a two-state solution. She believes in state of Palestine living alongside a state of Israel. They don't agree on that. But the thing that's amazing to me is as much disagreement as they have politically, the warmth between them and the affection that they have for each other personally, the questions that they ask about each other's children is really remarkable. And it shows that there's something even beyond friendship. They cannot, as Dahlia says, they cannot wish each other away. They are there with each other. And one way or another, even as remote a possibility as this looks like right now, they're going to have to coexist.
What are their lives like now? You know, is Bashir still a militant? Is he has he been sent back to prison since he was released after the 15-year term?
Bashir spent a lot of his life in prison, Terry. He was suspected of being one of the organizers of the first Intifada in early 1988. He was deported from the West Bank, essentially deported a second time. He went to Lebanon, came back during the Oslo process in 1996, and then during the so-called second Intifada, the Al-Aqsa Intifada, after the year 2000, he was imprisoned again for a year. He says he was never charged with anything. There's a status called administrative detention where people are basically incarcerated by Israel without any formal charge. And he says he was never charged with anything during this time. And he's been out again for the last several years.
You first wrote the story of the Lemon Tree, the story of Bashir and Dahlia, and for your 1998 radio documentary. Now, 8 years later, your book, which expands on that story, has been published. Have your feelings about the story and the meaning of the story changed over the 8 years?
Yes, definitely. They've deepened, mostly because of how I was able to learn so much more about the experience of each family. One of the families, the Ashkenazi family, Dalia's family, was from Bulgaria. And I learned by spending weeks and weeks in Bulgaria the story of Dalia's family and how they escaped the Holocaust in the 1940s in Bulgaria, which is an incredibly compelling story. And at the same time, I learned from Bashir's perspective, from his family's perspective, and from the broader Palestinian perspective, this whole notion of what it's like to be attached to land that you've lived on for more generations than you can count. This connection to a town that was founded by Arabs in the year 715, Ramle, and what it's like to live in exile, what it's like to feel that your home is a place you need to go back to, even to the point that people in some of the villages now, the refugee camps, will draw the villages that have been disappeared for 50 years. They'll draw the maps of these villages for their grandchildren. So rather than just connecting with the story that I grew up with more, which is a story of Israel being born out of the Holocaust, I was able to deepen my understanding of how this truth is matched and met by the truth of the Palestinian exile. One of the most compelling things, Terry, about my experience in this is that the war of 1948, which began on May 15th, it's called the War of 1948 by many historians. It's called the War of Independence by Israel, and it's called the Nakba, or catastrophe, by Palestinians. And it was this experience that was really deepened by my research on the book.
Is it difficult for Bashir, who's Palestinian, and Dalia, who is Israeli, to actually see each other now with changes in Israeli policy about borders?
Well, they don't see each other very much, and part of that is a practical reason. It's extremely difficult for them to be physically in the same place. Bashir is not allowed to go to Jerusalem. He hasn't even received permission he's been wanting to go to Jordan for medical treatment and has not got permission essentially to leave Ramallah from Israeli authorities. So that makes it difficult for him to go see her. And for Dalia, it's as a civilian Israeli citizen, she is not supposed to go to the West Bank. I went with her and a Palestinian translator, Palestinian English translator, Palestinian journalist, Nidal, to the West Bank, and we basically sort of snuck Dalia across. We didn't literally sneak her. She was sitting right there in the car, but they didn't ask for her ID. And if they had, they might have turned us around. But so we went there, and we saw Bashir, and it is difficult for them to talk to each other about politics, but the personal warmth they have for each other's families is so remarkable, and it's so deep, and it's so compelling to stand there. And if they hadn't seen each other in 7 years, and she walks up the steps, and she says to Nidal, "Oh, I want to hide behind you," and she walks up, and finally, and there's Bashir standing at the landing with this incredible smile on his face, this broad smile, and they stand there looking into each other's eyes, as if they were oldest of friends, just shaking each other's hands for what seemed like 5 minutes, and asking, "Oh, I hear Ahmad, who's Bashir's son, who's named after Bashir's father. I hear he's going to Harvard. You must be so proud. And how's Raphael?" This is Dalia's son. "How is he doing?" "Oh, he's into computers." "Oh, you must be so proud yourself." And this kind of personal warmth, it's not just small talk. It's establishing a recognition of the connection that they have to each other. Even across these political chasms, there is some hope to me for reconciliation, because when people actually get to know each other, they have a chance to try to understand where their peoples might go, that's not just based on peace, but that's based on some sort of sense of fairness of how this could all work out.
Well, Sandy Tolan, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It's good to talk to you.
Sandy Tolan. His new book is The Lemon Tree. You can find a link to his 1998 radio documentary, The Lemon Tree, on our website, freshair.npr.org.